and welcome to episode 3 of Shuffle the Pack podcast with myself, Gary, and my co-host James. Hello, James. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Very, very buzzing after week 1 win. So certainly put a skip in my step throughout this week thus far.
Definitely. It was a good win as well. It was 43-36? No, 43-34. Sorry, my numbers are wrong here. Bit hairy for a little bit. I think in the first quarter, we weren't exactly up to full strength as what we should have been.
Yeah, I mean, the first quarter, it looked like an awful lot like last season, particularly on offense, particularly when they got into the red zone. They were sort of driving the ball between the 20s really comfortably, but then obviously getting stopped. Well, going to 3 trips to the red zone without a touchdown. One or two was a turnover on downs on the 1 yard line. Like, oh, here we go again with the same old sort of red zone faults. But they clearly clicked out of that because they soon found a third, fourth and fifth gear and blew the Vikings out of the water, really.
Yeah, I mean, like, so from the second quarter second and third quarters, really, they were just absolutely dominant. There was nothing, the Vikings had effectively no answer to any of the questions that the offense was asking of them, you know, like with Jaire Alexander getting a sack on Cousins in the end zone as well. That's pretty good news, I would imagine.
Yeah, so Jaire Alexander was a good stat I saw over the weekend. Became the 9th player in NFL history to record a sack, a safety, and a interception in the same game, which is probably pretty good company to keep with only 9 people in the whole 101-year history have managed to do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's something for the CV. You know, I'd be proud of that if I was him. But we can't give all the credit to him. Obviously, Za'Darius Smith had a good sack on Cousins as well. So, you know, 2 sacks for the whole team, pretty good.
Yeah, I thought, although Rashawn Gary didn't actually register a sack, he led the team along with Za'Darius Smith in pressures. If you look back on some of the film posted by some of the beat writers about this week, and he was an absolute beast on some of the plays, which is really good to see because he's a very disappointing rookie season. But it seems there was a lot of good talk in camp, and that hopefully is translating onto the field as well. So, yeah, big shout out to his performance on Sunday as well.
Obviously, we'd be remiss to not talk about Devontae Adams. What a week he had.
I looked up
some stats for his last 6 games as well. He's got something like, where is it? We've written this down. They might have got it online. The stats I've seen for him, for the last 6 games, he's got 58 catches, nearly 800 yards and 6 touchdowns in his last 6 games. I mean, that's not to be sneezed at, you know?
He's been in sensational form since coming back from that turf toe injury, sort of back end of last season. He's really been unplayable at times. 14 receptions on Sunday, which tied the Packers franchise record that has been held in 1942. So these aren't records to be sniffed at. These are proper records, and apparently he didn't even know that he tied the record until Rodgers told him after the game. So pretty humble guy considered as well, but he was an absolute flat track bully. The Vikings, as we discussed in the last podcast, had 2 very young, inexperienced corners, but he made them look very much sort of high school level comparatively.
Do you think with Adams only being 1 short of having the record outstanding for himself, do you think that'll spur him on to try and get it in the next couple of games? Or,
well, if you look at obviously those stats you mentioned, the tear he's been on of late, you'd be a brave man to not bet on him getting it based on how he's been playing. Obviously, the depth outside of him, I mean, I thought that Lazard and MVS both had pretty reasonable games. MVS obviously had 2 very noticeable drops, but even with that, far of 100 yards and caught a touchdown late in the first half. So, they, as an offense, they showed us how efficient they could possibly be. But it goes as far as Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams are going to take from a passing game scheme, and Devontae Adams just a beast on Sunday.
No, absolutely. He was unplayable. Quick shout out for Mason Crosby. I'm an absolute sucker for a kicker. I think he went 4 for 4 over the weekend, or was it 5 for 5? I can't remember. But he had like a great game. He's actually in my fantasy team, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, he's an all around legend. There's no doubt about it. He's been him and Rodgers have been an absolute stalwart since the entire time I followed the Packers. I've got a very, very deep soft spot for Mason. Obviously, I don't know if you saw the stats over the weekend, but some of the performances from kickers around the league were very, very poor. But in particular, I don't know if you saw Gostkowski for the Broncos. He missed 3 kicks for the Titans, and then managed to hit the game winner. But yeah, if he hadn't, he must have been sweating when he steps on the field for that game winner, because he really would have been the good after that game.
I personally would have been sweating if I was in his position, so I'm glad it was him and not me. What else? Alan Lazard, he had a pretty good game overall.
Yeah, he did. He, as I say, he was very tidy throughout the game. Rodgers, after game, in his post game interview, and just said that there's not a lot of guys that over the years that I've trusted, and it takes a lot for me to actually have sort of absolute confidence and trust. And with Lazard, I feel that I have that confidence, and so that in itself is really the gold standard from Aaron Rodgers, because he doesn't have that rapport with many people. By all accounts, Lazard didn't actually have the best camp, but steps on the field Sunday and looks like he hasn't missed a beat. So very good to see, and hopefully, obviously, him and MBS can continue making strides and offer, coming alongside Devontae, who, you know, he's need no introduction.
In our first episode, it was, 3-4 weeks ago now, whatever it was, I asked you, is Rodgers done? I think it's probably fair to say that he's got another good couple of years left in him. Would you kind of agree with that still, or...?
I would. I mean, I've always been a bit of a Rodgers homer anyway. He was the reason I got into the sport in the first place and fell in love with the Packers. So I'm always going to have a very, very big soft spot for him. But yeah, he was phenomenal on Sunday. One of the best games I've seen from him in the last sort of 5 or so years. Really, he was looking back to that sort of 2014 MVP best. Now, one game, you don't want to go over the top and start saying, oh, he's definitely going to get MVP, but I'd say after 1 week this season, he's definitely the early front runner, so to speak. And if you can have a few more games like that, it would be lovely to see, because when he's playing that there's two passes, there's one to Lazard and one to Adams when he rolled out of the pocket and sidearm into them. I think outside of Paddy Mahomes, who could do that? It's truly phenomenal.
Well, that's it. So on that note, we should probably give a bit of a shout out to David Bakhtiari. There's one clip where he was holding the, like, almost single-handedly holding the Vikings D-line back for almost 10 seconds to extend the play. I think that might have been MVS's reception. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that, but I think that's more what that might have been. So I think he deserved a bit of a round of applause and a pat on the head for himself.
Yeah, getting him signed to a new deal has got to be pretty much number one priority for the front office at this point in time. He is, without a doubt, one of the best, if not the best, left tackle in the league. And it has been now for a number of seasons. That clip alone just shows how important he is. Rodgers loves to take his time in the pocket and wait for those deep plays to press downfield. And you need someone who's in tune with him and can block for that length of time. So, yeah, no, he truly is a stud.
So what about the rookies we had? Obviously, there's more than what I'm about to say, but DeGuara and AJ Dillon. I feel like they weren't on for a huge amount of time, but I think they both had a very good game.
Yeah, so Dillon was a fairly quiet, and actually Matt LaFleur came out in his press conference earlier today saying that he aims to get more and get involved in the running game this week moving forward. He had sort of two carries, I believe, for 14 yards, so at 7 yards a click. It's not bad, and particularly when you've got a Vikings defense who were on the field for as long as they were, you think that he would have been the perfect Sable to bring on at that point to just absolutely batter them when you've got thighs as big as he has. But DeGuara, I was pretty impressed with him, particularly from a blocking standpoint. I don't know if you saw Jet Sweep where he took out two Vikings with one block.
Yeah,
it was a sight to behold. He also had a one pass that was sort of out into the flat, which was covered by Kendricks, the best linebacker in the league. But if it hadn't been for any other linebacker in the NFL, he probably would have had a nice game. So he looks promising, and I think that Matt LaFleur is sort of talking about him sort of effervescently post game. So he's clearly very, very happy with that pick and how he's performing thus far.
So with that, you mentioned Matt LaFleur and the way he's going to start using the squad and things. Do you think we're starting to see, obviously last season was his first season in charge of the team, but you think this season we're going to see much more of like a more spread offense, a bit more running game involved, not just relying heavily on Rodgers' arm so much? Do you think we will see a bit more running game?
I think so. I mean, based on what we saw, obviously we've got 1 week to go off at this present time, but quite exciting from a play call perspective. It was very different from the dark days of sort of late McCarthy era where your sort of formation's pretty much consistently the same for the entire game. they were playing out of numerous formations. There was jet sweeps, there was motion, and it really was sort of a sight to behold, and they were gaining big chunks on those sweeps and motion. So yeah, I'm very excited to see how this season goes, because from 1 week's worth of evidence, it certainly looks like they've taken a step on offense. His concepts and ideas are really starting to sort of fruition, really.
Yeah, I think he's had like a good year to gel in. Obviously, it's been a different, difficult year than what it normally would have been. But I do think that we might be starting to see something a bit exciting from the team. Not that it hasn't been exciting before, but it has been a little bit sort of Mike McCarthy-ish. Do you know what I mean? It's almost a bit like Mick McCarthy-ish in the Irish national team, but that's a different story. So from the good to the bad, we need to talk about the injuries. Lucas Patrick's shoulder doesn't look too bad. Should be back next week. But Lane Taylor, another season-ending injury. He's not going to be back until at least next year.
I mean, he's torn his ACL, and your heart goes out for the guy. He chaotic went down in camp last season, worked so hard all season and off season to get fit, managed to get himself into the 53 and actually into the starting lineup, and then to in week one tear your ACL, be out for the season. You've got a feel for the guy. Obviously, he'd done tremendously in camp to get to that position. From a purely sort of Packers perspective, it's not great. Line at the moment is already looking pretty weak, although they didn't allow a sack in week one, and it was a bit of a ragtag bunch with the sixth round pick on Runyon having to step in for some time once Taylor was out. It's a concern. Obviously, they've got players to come back into the lineup, but it is a position group that's getting weaker and weaker by the day.
Yeah, you mentioned John Runyon there. I personally thought he filled in quite well at guard when both Patrick and Taylor were taken off the field. Obviously, like, Patrick didn't return for the game, but he should be back for next week. For Lane Taylor, do you think, with it being his effectively having 2 years out, do you think when he does, if and when he does come back, he's going to be the same player mentally, or if he's going to be struggling a bit?
Difficult to say. Obviously, every player is different and how they're going to come back from injury. The mental fortitude to do it once, hard enough to get yourself back to the level. He's 31 now. He actually took a pay cut this season to come back to the Packers, and then it's difficult. I mean, he's clearly got a bit about him because he's done it once, but to do it all over again and pretty much, yeah, right at the start of the season, at least if you get to sort of half the season, you think, well, at least I've made a bit of progress, but to do it so early on, once again, it's going to take a lot. But no, obviously thoughts go out for him, and obviously wish him a speedy recovery as possible, really.
So with that, do you think we need to bring someone up, anyone specific from the practice squad, or do we need to look at someone from free agency? Or?
Well, the obvious choice is Jared Valdir, who was with us last season. So he knows the offense. Obviously, he played all the way through to the NFC Championship game last season. He's still a free agent. And in fact, he's actually made a few sort of funny references on social media over the course of the last few weeks about obviously getting the Packers signed. I actually saw on Twitter today that he's actually due for a visit with the Cowboys, but he's the one that would make the most sense just because he already knows the offense. But whether or not they go that route remains to be seen. Mm-hmm.
We mentioned Christian Kirksey last week as well. I can't work out if he had a good or a bad game or not. He just seemed to be bang average. Didn't seem to be like an improvement or a reduction at all from Blake Martinez.
I didn't think he had a tremendous game. I thought, obviously, he's been out for a long time, no preseason to adjust either. So I do want to give him a bit of time to see how he beds in. Had an early face mask call against him, and the run D looked very porous at times early on. Actually, the guy who I thought impressed a lot on Sunday was the undrafted free agent named Chris Barnes. I've been getting that, pronouncing that right. But he came in, had
the same Chris Barnes and Marcus Valdez Scantlin or something, you know.
But he came in, and actually on his PFF grade was the highest for any defender. I think he was only on for 6 snaps, but in those 6 snaps he had 2 tackles for loss behind the line. So could they have found something from absolutely nothing off of the undrafted free agent? I'm hoping so, because that linebacking core does look very, very thin. Props to him for having a great game.
I think the two lines in particular are looking a little bit thin. I think we're okay in the backfield, but the actual lines themselves, like the five at the front, are not looking particularly smart if one of them goes down, like as we saw with the with Patrick and Taylor, actually. They're not exactly blessed with a lot of talent behind them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super concerned with the Kenny Clark injury this week. I mean, you only have to look at how many Vikings points were scored once he went down and left the game to see sort of what a difference that he can does make. Now, admittedly, a lot of those points were in garbage time. The game was already in hand at that point. Still a little bit disappointing to watch the Packers give up such easy scoring drives. It seemed like every time the Vikings got the ball in the fourth quarter, they scored a touchdown and a two-point conversion with very little resistance, which is never a good habit to get into because games should be completely out of sight quite quickly back in hand. So that's something I'd be slightly concerned about. I want to see how they get on this week, whether or not it was just a case of they already knew the game was won and they switched off. But it is a concern with Kenny Clark. Injury status still very much up in the air. No announcement yet by the Packers and LaFleur on Monday and said that they don't think they'll have an update till Thursday, which with availability on sort of Sunday seems perhaps it might be a game too soon, which would be a big loss for the Packers.
So you mentioned the fourth quarter is basically garbage time, so that's why you think the players may have switched off a little bit. Do you think that's wise if we come up against a better team? Obviously, like, Vikings are not a bad team, but if we were to come up against, say, someone in the playoffs, if we start switching off in the fourth quarter because we think we're that far ahead, but then we're against, for example, the Saints or something, any old team off the top of my head, do you think we'd be punished for it?
I mean, you certainly can be. You've seen time and time again that this one of the reasons that makes this sport so good is the fact that teams can come back from seemingly impossible deficits. It's certainly a concern. I'd like to see obviously a few more games, and if it becomes a recurring theme, then I'd probably be a bit more worried. At the moment, I'm probably, you know, very happy. We went into the Minnesota, came out with a win, and they've got egg all over their face. But it's certainly something to keep an eye on as the season moves forward.
Just before we move on from the Vikings game, a couple of years ago, the Vikings came up with it has been X amount of days since the Vikings beat the Packers, and we're currently at 661. Just going to throw that in there. It's almost 2 years since the Vikings last beat the Packers, so I'm quite happy with that. I think it'll be over 2 years before we actually meet them again later in the season, so I'm pretty confident we'll be okay with that.
So, yeah, it's not a bad stat. Hopefully we can beat them again in week 8 and increase that, get that over 1,000 days. That'll be nice.
That would be very good. What's that? That's about 2.5-3 years nearly. That's nearly 4 years. We're aiming for 1,000 days. See how that goes. Right, so obviously on Sunday, so we're recording this on Wednesday, so that's what, 4 or 5 days away. So we're looking at the Lions game. Now, the Lions last week didn't have a terrible game. They were probably let down the last minute by a drop catch in like the last couple of plays. But Stafford actually didn't have a bad game. I thought it could have been a lot worse.
No, I mean it's typical Lions. The Lions will be what the Lions have always been, which is must be eternally frustrating to be a fan of the Lions. I mean, they were led by 17 points at one point in that game against the Bears, and you think that they've got the game in hand, and then to blow that, and then to come all the way back and drop that catch in the end zone. DeAndre Swift, what are you doing? It's your debut. Time to put your name up in lights, wouldn't you? The team the week, and Christ, what a drop that is.
You had the chance to win the ball and you had to let yourself down.
Yeah, I mean, how's that going to go through your mind all week, isn't it? You had the game in your hand, you dropped it. I don't know if you heard the radio call that was played, and all the Lions announcers were going absolutely nuts because they assumed that they'd won the game, and then obviously they'd realised he dropped it, and then the audible groans and shouts of no, it was a sight to behold. But it must be horrifically bad to be a Lions fan at some time.
Definitely. So Stafford went 24 for 42 attempts, just under 300 yards, one touchdown, one interception. Surely that's a beatable quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, Stafford, I'd say, probably the second best quarterback in the NFC North behind Rodgers. I think him and Cousins are both at a similar level on their day. They can easily beat any side in the league if they're red hot. Mitch Trubisky, less said about him, the better. But
I can't believe he was drafted.
Although he did have a good game, in all fairness. No picks and three touchdowns. Where did that come from? But no, I mean, you only have to look back to last season where the Packers didn't lead for a single second but somehow managed to win both games, to see that this Lions team, they're a dangerous side on their day. They can play up to any game, and they typically tend to play up against the Packers, particularly in recent years. So I think it's very much, I know it's early in the season to be saying banana skin, but for the aspirations that this Packers team, particularly after that performance in week one, should be having, you should be beating this Lions team at home, I think. I don't think that's arrogant. I think that this is a Packers team that come off the NFC Championship game appearance. They've put in an absolute quality appearance against a playoff winner from last season in the Vikings on the road. So you've got to be winning the sort of backing that up with a win at Lambeau. Really no fan.
The Lions' next three games are Packers, Cardinals, and home. They host the Saints in Detroit. I think they'll probably look to the Packers as the game they can win of those three, because I think the Saints are too strong. The Cardinals, they'll have no idea what's going on with them because they're in a really tough division, but they look like incredibly good. They'll probably see us as a bit more of an easy target because we're a bit of a more known quantity, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, with the NFL, you see time and time again that the hole that teams get into if they go 0-2, it really is a mountain to climb if you want to make the playoffs. Obviously, this season, the seven teams make the playoffs. That might change the dynamic somewhat from a maths perspective, but when you have to look at the stats, and when you start falling 0-2, it really is very, very difficult to make the playoffs. So this is going to be a hungry team. They had the game in their hand with seconds to go in the fourth quarter and undoubtedly should have won. So I think they're going to give back everything they've got because, as I say, it really is a must win for them because they can't afford to be going 0-2.
If they lost to the Bears, lose to us, lose to the Cards, lose to the Saints, then they'd be in trouble. They're not like the Steelers last year who ended up finishing 8-8 after a horrendous run at the start of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you go sort of 0-3, 0-4, you're not making the playoffs. Barring a fairy tale run, it's so unlikely that you're going to make it. So it really is important, these early weeks. It's one of the reasons that makes the NFL regular season so good, in my point, is because even in week one, week two, you just can't afford to slip up. It means so much. Such a short season that every single game matters so much. So, yeah, I think they're going to definitely give us a game. One point which is very much positive for the Packers is the Lions cornerback room is absolutely devastated at the moment. They lost Justin Coleman, their starting corner. He's now on IR, not designated to come back for at least sort of 3 weeks. Desmond Trufant left with a hamstring injury against the Bears, which is their other starting corner. Jeff Okuda, the guy that they drafted very early on in the first round, he wasn't fit to make his debut against the Bears. Apparently, he might be fit, but he's clearly not fully healthy. So you've got three starting cornerbacks for them, probably two of them aren't going to be fit to play. So you've got to think that Devontae Adams and Aaron Rodgers must be licking their chops, thinking they've got a very depleted cornerback lineup coming up at Lambeau.
This could be a cricket score next week, is what you're saying.
Through green tinted spectacles as usual, that's how I try and always look for the positives. And when I saw the injury list, how many cornerbacks are injured or on IR after only 1 week, I had to admit my eyes did light up a little.
Are you prepared to put a number down for that?
Well, we'll go with our prediction. You actually got the score line, not the score, but the margin of victory spot on, I believe, from last week.
Because I also won like a pick six league, I mean, so I'm just winning everything this week. I'm going to put a lottery ticket on and see what happens.
Yeah, what are the numbers? I'll just write those down.
I wish I could tell you. I get my premonitions just before I do it, you know.
But no, I'm gonna say this week, I'm gonna say Aaron Rodgers has another good game. I'm gonna go with Packers winning 30-17.
I'm not far off that. Sorry, you carry on.
No, go.
I was just gonna say I'm not far off that. Obviously, I agree with you. I've got 33-17, so we're very close there.
Okay. Yeah, I personally think it's going to be one of those games that stays close, probably until the late third, early fourth quarter. And then I'm sort of bagging Aaron Rodgers to just stay on the form and sort of blow them out of the water later on.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a totally dominant performance. I think we'll lose a touchdown in a field goal or something in the fourth quarter. And that's in the same way we started conceding points late on to the Vikings. I think we'll do the same with the Bears. Bears flying, sorry. I think that's how our season our could be the way the season's going, but hopefully it won't be. And yeah. What else do we need to talk about as far as the Lions are going? Apart from if Stafford stays healthy, are they better than 8-8?
They've certainly got things on paper. I'm still not sold on the Matt Patricia era Lions.
That I don't think anyone's sold on Matt Patricia era Lions. I don't even think Matt Patricia is sold on Matt Patricia era Lions. Like he's definitely
the Patriots at this point. You're right. The Ford family probably also not that sold. I think he's on probably a fairly short leash. I think
it's got to be a season. Surely.
If he doesn't make the playoffs, I think there's probably going to be it for him. Because
especially if he's in the playoffs as well.
Yeah.
So if there's anything up for grabs, then theoretically there's something else for them to play for.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that they have to be thinking, well, pre-season, I think they definitely saw themselves as a playoff contender. I don't think that division, I don't know, I think that it was always going to be between Packers and Vikings, and I still am of that belief. I think the Vikings will sort of dust themselves off. Mark Zimmer's a very good coach. Seen that years gone past, I think that they will challenge. But I think this Lions team had to be seriously thinking that they could be targeting one of those sort of three wild card spots. If they do go, as I say, go into that 0-2, 0-3 hole, then I think that it might well be sort of curtains early doors for their playoffs.
Just loosely on the extra playoff thing, obviously the NFC West, I think, is a very tough division with the Seahawks, Niners, Cardinals, and well, we won't talk about the Rams because they're not that great, but whatever. That's probably, I don't know, like, if the Cardinals were in pretty much any other division, they'd be like smashing out of the park, I think, this year. Like, just the acquisitions they've made and the way they looked against the Niners on Sunday there were just unreal.
Yeah, I mean, to go into that stadium and pull out a win is incredibly difficult against that defense, especially. Or on two occasions last season, how well that team can play and blow you out of the water if they want to. So it really is a statement win from Cardinals. Kyler Murray looked very good, particularly with his legs. We didn't see probably as much as that as we would have anticipated in his rookie season. And that touchdown run, I don't know if you've seen the reverse angle of it, but it really is gorgeous. The way he jukes out one of the 49ers defenders is really a sight to behold. No, they're definitely going to be an exciting team. DeAndre Hopkins seems to have spotted in without missing a beat. I think he had 14 catches, so same as Devontae in his first ever game there. So clearly he's not missed a beat. And I mean, why the Texans would have traded away a player of his talent? Is
for what price as well? You might as well have been like a bag of magic beans.
For an over-the-hill running back on a high contract, it is absurd that they would have even considered that. The fact that they wouldn't have even called around and said, this is what we're about to get for DeAndre Hopkins. Does anyone want to offer more than this? And everyone would have gone, yes, of course.
I think most of the league would have like bit their hands off. Like Bill O'Brien, he needs some help, like, because he's the GM as well as the head coach. He's not Bill Belichick. He needs a lot more help. He's not as clever as he thinks he is, I think.
No, I think he's actually a pretty reasonable coach. I mean, he's taken a lot of pretty bum Texans teams to the playoffs year in, year out, particularly when they had some pretty shocking quarterbacks before. But as a GM, he is truly abysmal. So his record, and he gets fleeced pretty much in every single trade. If you look at their score now comparatively to where they were two, three seasons ago before he took over as GM, the amount of talent they've lost is really, really well, an awful loss.
It's unreal. Speaking a bit further around the NFL, then let's talk about Saquon Barkley against the Steelers. What a statistic! Did you see that? Barkley had more rushing yards than Big Ben.
Yeah, I did. See, unfortunately, Saquon Barkley is in my fantasy team, so I woke up, bright and early on Tuesday morning and saw those stats reflecting back from my phone screen. I was obviously less than impressed as I lost very narrowly, thinking, oh, Saquon, he'll probably get at least sort of 50, 60 yards, maybe a touchdown. Absolutely not. It's absolutely shocking. His stats were truly awful. That Steelers defense, however, they look mean. They look ready to play in week one. They were very good last season, but again, they look so ready to play considering they had no preseason. I think they really have sort of Super Bowl aspirations if Big Ben can stay healthy, because that defense is not tremendous.
I think that's a big if for Big Ben, because he was drafted the same year as Manning, wasn't he? Like Eli?
2004. So it was famous him, Eli, and
Philip Rivers.
Philip Rivers, yeah. Who had a less than stellar debut. You think Colts on the road in Jacksonville. That's got to be an absolute lock, considering that Jacksonville pretty much traded every valuable or semi-valuable player they had on the roster.
And do you think, on the Jags, do you think they'd go in for Trevor Lawrence for next season? Do they go in for the number one pick?
It's easy to say. On paper, you thought that was the plan, but will Gardner Minshew allow that? He was. I don't know if you saw his stats on Sunday, but he went 19 for 20 with 3 touchdowns and no picks. Admittedly, he didn't throw for an awful lot of yards, but super efficient given what the defense offered him. So yeah, no, he was. I don't think he'll go down without a fight based on his attitude.
Yeah, I think that's pretty... those numbers are rivaling the efficiency of Russell Wilson over the weekend. You see that 31 for 35.
Yeah, I mean, we've been saying for years what's holding Russell Wilson back, not that it's been sort of slow at showing it, but what holds him back is their play calling. Obviously, always been very, very run heavy. This offseason, they've made a commitment to air the ball out, and you've seen that in week one. 4 touchdowns, yeah, 31 for 35 passing, 330 odd. Yards through the air, truly a tremendous quarterback. And I mean, the fact that he's never been an MVP in this league is disgusting, because he is truly a prodigious talent.
He really is. And another team that just ruined everyone's bet slips this weekend was the Washington football team.
Absolutely,
the Eagles with 27 unanswered points.
Big up Ron Rivera, playing with. Obviously, recently diagnosed with cancer. First game, comes into that organisation, absolute turmoil, changing the name. Obviously, whatever's going on with the sexism behind the scenes. He comes in there, he has to have an IV at half-time because he's suffering for having cancer treatment at the moment, just to give him the energy to stay on the sidelines, and pulls out the first W. But absolute pure respect for the man. I'm so glad that they got the win. Also helps, I don't like the Eagles. But no, that was a truly horrific loss for the Eagles, though. 17-0 up, cruising at that point against a team that everyone predicts to maybe, 4-5 games tops. To lose, it really is a shocking result. But no, props to the Washington football team. That D-line is looking absolutely ridiculous with the addition of Chase Young. They've already got talent in Kerrigan on that line. So no, that if you're going to face Washington, you better have a good O-line this year.
They could be a dark horse for one of those extra playoff places. I mean, I'm not saying that they will be, but maybe not this year, maybe next year, once they've got like a full year on Rivera under them. Because Carolina were really good under Rivera.
And, I don't know if...
Their new coach.
I don't know if you saw it over the weekend, but it was just like, as if 2020 couldn't get weird enough. Obviously, Washington was the only team in the NFC East to actually win a game. So at the moment, they're currently out in front, head of the division. So, you know, see your Cowboys, Eagles, Giants. It's the Washington football team coming for that playoff spot at the moment.
Speaking loosely of the Panthers there, with I'm going to try and be more professional with my segues. So speaking loosely of the Panthers there, Josh Jacobs faced the Panthers, the Raiders. He had a blinding game, I think.
He is.
Numbers, but just like really hyper-efficient at running back.
Yeah, he really is a special talent. Obviously, last season, he flashed a lot in his rookie season until he got that injury that ruled him out at the end of the year. But he really looked very, very, very good. It was really a sort of match-up of star running backs with him and CMC, who again had a great day. Very much one of those shootouts. Who ends up with the ball last is probably going to come out with the win, and invariably, it was the Vegas Raiders that managed to sneak out of Carolina with the W.
Vegas Raiders. I love the way that sounds, man. It sounds better than like Los Angeles or Oakland Raiders, just Vegas Raiders. Something like they've come from the desert to rampage through these rich people spending too much money in casinos, you know.
2023, Packers go to Vegas. That's when I'll be going there, that's for sure.
Yeah,
I had that rip hung in my diary. As soon as I saw they were moving, I worked out when that fixture was. COVID, as long as it's gone by then, I'll be at that game without a shadow.
Joe Burrow had a pretty good opening day, I thought. I mean, he obviously didn't win, but I think he was he had a couple of poor rookie judgment errors, I suppose. But before that, I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, the pick showed a bit of rookie. You know, it's typical for a rookie coming in. But leave that drive that he did to potentially tie the game, obviously. Randy Bullock missed the game-time field goal.
Which leg of Randy Bullock's hurts? Because every picture he shows him holding his right leg, but the injury claim is his left leg. How's that happening?
Yeah, so apparently he pulled his hamstring, but yeah, dubious at best. I mean, that kick, I don't know if you saw it, but it starts about 20 yards outside the right goalpost. So I don't think that even if his hamstring had been not injured, we would have been okay.
We've all done it in five-a-side, though, you know. When you shank one left and you start staring at the floor going, look, there's a bubble, you know what I mean? It's, I think that's what he's at, you know.
No, he sold it. I got utmost respect for him because that's what Gostkowski needed to do against Denver. And he kept missing, just, or he would have saved himself from that.
Probably should have done, but Gostkowski wouldn't have got the win in the end.
True, he wouldn't have got the W at the very end.
That's it, you know. Baker Mayfield, what a horrid time he had against the Ravens. Like, was he like down 3rd and 41 at one point?
Yeah, early in the first half, down 3rd and 41. I mean, God, Browns, it must suck to be a Browns fan, mustn't it? That you think you're getting a bit of luck. Obviously, you draft Baker Mayfield in his rookie season. He looks quite talented. You think, oh, this could be the change. And then, obviously, he had a horrific season last season. You fire the coach, get a fresh new beginnings, and then they go out and lay an absolute egg on against the Ravens. Now, don't get me wrong, the Ravens are a good side, one of the best in the league, arguably Super Bowl favourites in many people's eyes, but even still, the way they played, to only score 6 points and to allow so many, it leaves a horrible taste in any Browns fan's mouth. And you've got to be thinking, if it continues to go this way, similar to last season, will the Browns think about making a change at QB? They'd have to seriously consider it if he plays like he did last season.
Well, Baker Mayfield started off in the league very well. I don't think he was the opening day quarterback in his rookie season, but he had like a couple of games, then off he went. Had a pretty good, put up a lot of pretty good stats. I think he broke a record, I can't remember off the top of my head, in that season as well. But he's had four head coaches in 3 years, which as a rookie, you don't need that. You don't need that sort of turmoil, you know what I mean? So hopefully, whoever they got now, I can't remember, his memory's terrible.
Fansky, isn't it? The former OC of the Vikings that's in there at the moment.
That's the chap. He's the first. He's supposed to be pretty good, do you know what I mean? So with a bit of luck for Baker, then he should be, he should put a few more stats up this year, I think. I mean,
I'd like to see it. I mean, he's a bit of a character, isn't he? That's what you want ultimately in a sport like this. He's quite a big show, box office really, but he's not really backed that up since in the last year and a half.
Next up for the Browns, they've got the Bengals, so it should be interesting to see Baker against Burrow. What do you think?
Who's Battle of Ohio.
That's it. Who's going to come out on top of the toilet bowl?
You'd say the Browns, I mean, on paper, they're still such a talented side. So I know that the game isn't played on paper, but you still think that they should beat this Bengals side. The Bengals had the first overall pick for a reason. That quarterback isn't the only place that they're deficient of talent. So you'd think that, the Browns really, if they want to have any realistic chances of having a sort of good season and making the playoffs, they've got to be winning those sort of games.
And there's a rumor came out on Twitter the other day that the Browns are actively shopping around OBJ. Do you think they actually are? Because I think if they do, then that's going to be past the end of their season, basically. I think that proves it's a tank, or not?
Oh, what was that? Sorry?
Hello, am I back? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right, sorry, I had a little bit connection unstable. I think the wife connected to the internet for something. So the Browns are apparently shopping around Odell Beckham. Do you think that's worth their time to do or not?
Yeah, it's interesting to see who would actually be interested. I think from all the reports that were bounding around on Twitter, it seemed like the Browns were asking a pretty high price for him. So I think they were saying at least sort of a first and a second. For a player who hasn't really produced now for quite a while, admittedly he's a superstar and he's got a big name and a lot of Instagram followers, but he hasn't really put it on the field for a while. So I don't see anyone paying those sort of prices for him. I think that if get him in for perhaps a high second round pick, I think teams probably would be more interested. But at those prices, I think that it's no one's going to buy it, really.
If Beckham is on the way out, does that mean that the Browns are effectively tanking this season? Because he's like their main guy now.
Whether it means that they're tanking the season or whether or not he's not a good locker room guy, whether or not he ever really wanted to go to Cleveland, obviously he wanted out to New York. He had a big bust up there and then forced his way out. They sent him to Cleveland. I don't know. I think it would probably have been his most desired destination, playing with, well, the rookie quarterback, the first-year quarterback at that time. So maybe it's that. I don't know if it's necessarily their tank, and they still got Landry amongst other weapons there. So I wouldn't say they were definitely punting on the season, but it would definitely mean that front office and you're picking up a guy who two teams had now kicked to the curb. You've got to think, what's going on? Who is this guy really?
Looking ahead to next week as well, like just the game that sort of stands out to me is the Eagles against the Rams. I genuinely believe that Aaron Donald is going to eat Carson Wentz for breakfast. He was manhandled in the Cowboys line last week. Can't see the Eagles being any better than that if they're dropping all these points to Washington.
I'm inclined to agree with you. I mean, as I say, Washington had 8 sacks of Carson Wentz. Admittedly, as I say, they've got a great D-line, but you've got to be worried. Carson Wentz this week, knowing that he was sacked 8 times last week, he's probably still battered and bruised, and he's got the meanest man in probably the NFL in Aaron Donald coming his way multiple times on Sunday. So, yeah, could be an 0-2 start for and a 2-0 start for the Rams, which, as we mentioned, that division really is going to be a bloodbath, I think, all season in the NFC.
I think the smart bet is to see Jalen Hurts on. Not next week, but the following week, because the QB2 in the Eagles is just going to be like a write-off, I think. So he's going to get smashed to pieces next weekend, like for this third and fourth quarter after Wentz comes out, because he's made a glass. He'll be done by the first half. QB2 comes in, Jalen Hurts up for the third week in the season, and then that'll be him. Because as we know, like Carson Wentz doesn't finish the season.
Not his thing. He likes to, you know, dip in here and there, and then go home. You know, have an early off.
Fallback, you know. right, is there anything we've not covered? Anything we've missed? I've missed.
I think we've touched on most bases. Yeah. But obviously the main things to do, the Packers to get to 2-0, hopefully, and hopefully we've got more investment praise for Rodgers to next week, and he continues his little MVP tear.
Well, that's it, you know. So we both think that the Lions are going to score 17 next week, and we're about 30-33 for the Packers. So with a bit of luck, one of us will be right. Either way, we're both
unknown to you thus far.
Yeah, it's not a competition until we put money down. on that note, then this has been the Shuffle the Pack podcast. My name's Gary. I'm here with James. Say goodbye, James.
Bye.
Follow us on Twitter at Shuffle Pack. And email the podcast if you have anything to say at shufflethepackpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks very much, and we'll see you again next week.